evening. I hope you're well. Please join me in saying the Anabakalah. Anabakalah, Gedula Chimincha, Dati Terura, Aleph Bet Gimel Yitzchak Tzadik, connects us to unconditional love through its gematria. Kabel rinat amcha sagvenu saharenu nora ufreshayim sintet nun. The six letters spell cross upon tear up Satan, tear up the negativity that gives us free choice. Same letters can be rearranged to spell small gates, Sha'ar Katan. Reminds us to guard our gates, the eyes, ears, nose, and mouth, which are the gates, the entry points for the negative system. Na Gibor Dorshe Yehudcha Kivavach Shamrem Nun Gimadalad Yud Kavshin Barachem Tacharem Rachamei Tacha Na'el Adata. Betet Resh, Saritav Gimel. Tasim Kadosh, Berotuka, Na'el Adata. Yud Gimel Lamed, Pei Zayin Kuf. Yachid Geh, Lamcha Penei, Zokre Kedushata, Yud Gimel Lamed, Pei Zayin Kuf. Shavateinu Kabel, Ushma, Yachateo, Na'ela Data, Shin Kufav, Tzadi Yud Taf. The letters Taf that created the planet Levanah, the planet called the moon, and the Chet that created the constellation Sartan, the crab, or the cancer. And also the month of Tammuz, the Hebrew month of Tammuz. And the last verse we say in a whisper. I'm now going to read from the Zohar, from the Parsha of Balak. I'm reading section 13. Tzelya, who threw down Bilam. Verse 173. Yahweh b'midyan elahahu rasha kevan dechamad denaflu mi Yisrael tav dalad aleph al ato itakav taman vahava va'e menayhu agro uvod it akav taman atapin chas teravrevayane elaletaman. He inquires, where was Bilam at that time? If you say in Midian, why is it written, and now, behold, I go to my people? If he already left, who placed him in Midian? He responds, as soon as that wicked one saw that 24,000 fell from Israel due to his advice to allow freedom for the women to be immoral with Israel, he wished to collect from them his payment. While he was still there, Pinchas and the chiefs of the army arrived there. The verse is asking or answering a question that was placed previously. Is Bilam being a prophet? Bilam being on the level of Moshe, although on the other side, he could have, should have been able to protect himself from dying, from being killed by the Jews. And so, given that, the question is asked by Rabbi Elazar, how did they kill him? What was the mistake that he made that penetrated his protection shield? Because the system, the spiritual system, works the same for both. If you do the spiritual work, even if it's the negative spiritual work, there's a protection shield built, just as there is in, on the positive side. So what was the action that caused that shield to be a non-operative? And so that is really the question that is starting to be answered in this section. And it's explaining that he went back to his people, but then he realized that the 24,000 men were killed by the Jewish, by Pinchas, or by Cosby and Zimri, or by their own negativity. And therefore he is looking to get paid. So he immediately flies to Midian. How do we know he flew? That was said in earlier parts of the Zohar, explaining that he was flying along the way. The black art. If there are any questions, please go ahead and ask them. You will have to unmute yourself by pressing *6 because there was a lot of static built into the system. So try *6 to ask a question. I'll be opening it up for full questions, full comments in a little bit.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, I wasn't sure you heard me. How do we know he flew?
The Zohar says that he was flying along with the other kings of Midian.
Is that as a vision or truly made himself fly? Or he could, or people thought he could fly?
Pick one. The Zohar says, I'll see if I can find it quickly, because I just read it.
It would almost be like that time, I think there was a Chinese tribe around 700-800 years ago that could do that. There was a film about that.
There's a lot of people who teleport themselves. You do it every time you walk across the street.
Really? I teleport myself?
Yep. And let me explain it in a second. Here it is. Section 11, verse 161. Rabbi Elazar asked about Bilam the wicked, who killed him and how he got killed. Rabbi Yitzhak said, Pinchas and his people killed him, as it says, and they slew, and then it's dot, 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 beside the rest of them, which is a verse from Numbers, from this week's portion. We were taught that in the city of Midian, Bilam was performing with his witchcraft, and that he was flying in the air together with the kings of Midian. If not for the holy gold plate and the prayer of Pinchas that made him drop to the ground over their slain, they would not have been victorious over them. So it was actual magic, actual teleportation. Now, in the prophets, it talks about the 7,000 people that will fly over Jerusalem after the Armageddon War, that the people that are left, the survivors, will be in two levels. One level of consciousness will be those who know how to fly, and the other will be on those who need to continue to study all the levels of Torah, to be continuing the animal sacrifices, etc. But let me address the issue that says, where I said that you teleport yourself every day. To cross the street, let's say it's 60 feet. To cross the street, do you have to go 30 feet first?
To cross the street?
Yeah. Yes. You have to go half the street first.
You have to do the first half and then the second half.
Well, no. You have to do the first half first.
First. The first half first.
Before you can do the first half, you have to do the first quarter.
All right.
Before you can do the first quarter, you have to do the first eighth. Before you can do the first eighth, you have to do the first 16th. Before you can do the first 16th, you have to do the first 32nd. Before you can do the first 32nd, you have to do the first 64th. And before the first 64th, the first 128th. And before the first 128th, the first 256th. In other words, in order to cross the street mathematically, it's proven mathematically, according to science, that you can never cross the street. Because in order to do so, you have to cross a smaller distance first. And there's always a smaller distance that has to be crossed before the full distance can be crossed. And so mathematically, you cannot cross a street. And what Kabbalah explains is that's absolutely correct. If you want to cross a street, you visualize yourself, you put yourself on the other side of the street, on the corner.
I'm not really there.
You're already there. And the only process of us walking across the street, the only action of us walking across the street, is to catch up on the physical level of perception, to catch up with where we are mentally. You teleport yourself every time you cross the street. You teleport yourself any time you walk. But we don't see it that way. We see it as normal step by step. I take a step, and then I take another step. But the reality is, if you do not have the focus in your mind that I'm across the street, that I'm on the other side of the room, that I'm where my head is at, that whole process in the physical world of taking step by step doesn't happen. This is part of the discussion and the teachings by Rabbi Ashlag in the 10 Luminous Emanations. We all constantly teleport. We all constantly connect with the psychic abilities. But we perceive them with physical senses, and therefore we see ourselves as taking a step and going step by step as we walk across the street.
It's difficult to perceive.
Of course.
It is.
That's why it's called Cuckoo Kabbalah. Because it's not looked at logically.
I haven't heard this particular thing. I have heard that people can project themselves into other cities and other continents simply by...
So why is it different when you're taking 10 steps?
That one's difficult for me. I don't know why. I can visualize the other one easier than this one.
I appreciate that.
Hmm?
I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's I constantly reiterate in my classes, don't believe a word I say,
mm-hmm.
but try what I say. See if it works for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way of viewing and perceiving the world.
Mm-hmm.
What is the cause of people going across the street? Is it the step-by-step process of the physical world? And the answer is no. Because it happens.
Hello? Are you there? What happened? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm there. I needed to change it because when you don't unmute yourself after you speak, we end up with...
All right. Mm-hmm.
But the important thing to understand, the spiritual law is that there must be a spiritual cause.
Mm.
So if you walk across the street, it's not because you took a step, and then another step, and then another step. What happened is you projected yourself mentally, consciously, to the other side of the street. And since you are already there on the other side of the street, on the spiritual level, in the spiritual frame, the physical world now must catch up to the spiritual so that they reflect each other. They're mirror images of each other. And therefore, in the physical world, we have to take a step and go through something we call process to take another step and another until we reach the point where the physical world is now matching the spiritual. I've teleported myself across the street. Now the physical world has caught up with that mirror image. That's really what happened,
mm-hmm.
even though we perceive it differently.
That's something to think about, that everyone is. But I guess it's relative to the other... that you can transport yourself to another city, another country, so why not transport yourself across the street? But you have to think that one out, because you're not meditating to do that, you're just doing it. You're just your spiritual self is doing it, but you're not aware. You're just going along with it, so to speak.
Anytime you meditate or you transport yourself or you visualize yourself in a different location, then you're in that location on the spiritual level.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the physical world is now going to try and match its image with the spiritual image. I'll give you two examples. You're in Los Angeles right now.
Yes.
Oh, you want to be in Israel.
Yeah.
You decide, I want to go to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So now you visualize the wall, the Western Wall, mm-hmm. and now you're standing in that square.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how long would it take the physical world to catch up to that image?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it'll take you about 5,000 steps times 13,000 miles, about 80,000 steps you'll have to walk.
Mm-hmm.
To make the physical world match that image. Now, that's going to take more than a day. Now, since that process means you don't go there, the physical world knows that, the spiritual world knows that, that you're just doing it in your consciousness. But physically it doesn't have to implement, and so it doesn't.
Hmm. That's interesting. But if somebody would see me there while I was doing that, what would occur then?
That happens all the time. You're walking down the street and you see somebody who you know is in another city. But they're on the street walking and talking to you.
Yeah, but am I walking and talking? Am I talking back? Am I speaking to them?
Sometimes, yes. Because they're thinking of you at that moment in the other city. They're thinking of you, and you're thinking of them, and you both put yourself in the same location. Now, which city you put yourself into is up to them. They were thinking of you. They're the cause. So you'll go to them, and you'll be walking in that other city, and you'll be talking to them. But this is all taking place on the spiritual level. Is it supposed to happen like that? This is the gift Hashem gives us, but we don't realize it. This is how miracles happen, but we don't observe them. We don't perceive them. Most of the time when you're thinking about somebody else in another city, when you're walking in this city, it's a fleeting thought. It goes, and then you're back. But many times, you'll see them in the distance. They're thinking about you. So you look around, and you see, oh, my God, that's so-and-so. And maybe I should call them. And you'll get on the cell phone and you make the call, and they'll tell you, I was just thinking about you.
I've heard that. Yeah. And the same token, I thought about somebody and I called them and they said they were just thinking about me. Well, I don't see that too. From both sides.
Yep.
But I didn't know that you could actually hold a conversation when you teleport yourself to another city and somebody would recognize you. I didn't know that. I thought it was like a transparent self, not something that could speak.
It depends on the level of consciousness and the depth of connection and the spiritual frame. I have students who are not in control of this. They sometimes find themselves in another room someone that they're dating or someone they're close to.
Mm.
And early in the morning, they're both dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
And they're dreaming of each other, and they find themselves in that other room. And they have, you know, they communicate. And then in the morning, they'll talk about what was said, and they both remember it.
Mm.
One remembers the person going into their room, and the other, you know, and they'll remember the conversation that takes place. But it depends on the level of consciousness that you have developed.
I've heard of people who have given up for a dead, and they came back to life, and could tell everyone what they were saying, what they were wearing, who was in the room, and
the after-death experiences are very, they've been documented scientifically.
Yes,
very, very common.
So,
this isn't something that just happens then. It happens every minute, every instant of where is your consciousness? As I'm talking to you, what are you thinking? If you're thinking about what I'm saying, the content of what I'm saying, I don't need to be there physically. I don't need to be there spiritually. But if you're thinking about the messenger and the message, then I'm in the room with you. The same principles work all the time. And we just have to realize it. And we have to recognize that it's happening. You pour a pitcher of orange juice into a glass. Do you think that the orange juice, the atoms that make up the orange juice, actually move? What happens? You have projected mentally, spiritually, the filling up of the glass with orange juice. So the atoms in the orange juice now have the consciousness which you projected onto them that they're orange juice. And the physical world now has these atoms moving through the space just like you're taking a step by step. You perceive the orange juice flowing from the pitcher to the glass through air. But they don't move. They just light up. That atom became orange juice. The one that was, you know, to the left in the pitcher goes dark. It's no longer orange juice. And then atom by atom. That's what's taking place. This is the spiritual system, the spiritual world we're connected to. But we don't perceive it. And if you don't perceive it, if it's not part of your consciousness, you're not exercising. It's just what automatically happens. It's natural spiritual laws. What is a natural spiritual law? The same thing as natural physical law. Except we just call it nature instead of natural physical laws. There are natural spiritual laws just as there are natural physical laws. One of the natural physical laws is you can't go faster than 186,000 miles per second. Except that they've proven on the quantum levels that you can. What is the natural spiritual law that is the cause of that natural physical law? That to be in the spiritual world, you have to go faster than 186,000 miles a second. To be in the physical world, you can't go faster than that. To be in the spiritual world, you have to be going at least that fast. This is the simple cause and effect. So what goes faster than the 186,000 miles a second, there's only one thing, and that's thought.
Thought?
And that's why we have thought. And that's why we have etheric travel. Where we travel, people tell you stories, they've gone out into the Milky Way. They've gone out and they've seen all the flowers and all the plants singing praises to Hashem. All of these visions, all of these perceptions are accurate. This is what's happening. At every instant of every day, every entity, every consciousness sings praises to Hashem. Except man. Man has free will. He can either choose to sing a psalm in the morning, the afternoon, or the evening, or he doesn't. But the flowers sing all the time. The animals sing all the time.
I didn't know that.
We have a midrash called the Perek Shira, which describes what each animal sings. And it tells you which psalm that animal is singing. And it's talking about its nature, the nature of that animal, the nature of that creation. And it's tied to a particular psalm. It's an amazing book. I highly recommend getting it and reading it. It's very powerful.
What's the name?
Perek Shira.
Spell it.
P-E-R-E-K.
P-E-R-E-K?
Yes, Perek Shira. S-H-I-R-A. Shira. S-H-I-R-A. It's a midrash. But it's a midrash that may be a Torah. It's on that level. But it's seen as truth in the Kubbalim.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've always felt a closeness to animals for some reason. I don't know why. And we seem to communicate very well. And I don't know whether that this is having to do with that or what. But we've always had animals. Although right now we haven't because we can't afford the medical bills on them. So the last one went away 2 years ago. Right now I'm just babysitting or puppy sitting dogs.
Bernice, you're not, think about the questions to ask. Why do we live in a society that for the first time in centuries has an anti-poop law that forces people to follow their animals and pick up their shit? Why do we live in a society where the cost of caring for the animal is equivalent to the cost of medical care for the human being?
It is.
Why is that?
I don't know why it is. I tried healing that dog, all the ones we've had in the past, and I couldn't do it, so I had to
follow. I have a student who has done some negative things. But the point of what I'm about to relate to you, this student was caught and put in jail because she was unwilling to leave her animals. She knew that she needed to leave where she was. She knew she was going to be arrested. She had the choice of running and leaving the animals or not. And her decision was, I won't run away from these animals. Even though when she was arrested, she left the animals. They didn't take them with her. But she was not capable of perceiving the process. Her affinity with those animals was so intense that she was arrested because of it. But people don't ask the question, why? They just comment, this is the way it is. They don't ask the questions, why do things happen like this? On one level, the reason we live in a society that has the cost of animal care, of pet care, to be equivalent to the cost of human care, is part of the tax of all these previous lives where people were not giving donations the way they should have. Remember in my class on Tzedakah and Truma, I make it very clear, the universe keeps a very accurate financial tab. And if you are supposed to give Tzedakah or Truma contribution, mm-hmm. and you don't, you're going to get a car accident, God forbid. Nobody's hurt, but it's money that goes out of your pocket. Or they'll get into a parking ticket, or a speeding ticket, mm-hmm. or your animal will get ill. Mm-hmm. But each time you have choice, you can put the animal down, God forbid. But why do you not do it? Because, I'm taking care of the animal. In truth, we're abusing the animals by making them live in an environment that is not their natural state. We're abusing these animals. And we will pay the price in one form or another. This is a whole society doing this.
So why has this happened? Why have they become so many that, and so many that need caring for? Why has that happened?
I just gave you the answer. Extrapolate from the answer I gave you. Think about what I said, and you'll see the cause and effect.
Why were they put here in the first place for this to occur?
The animals?
Yes.
In the endless vessel, as we all come from the endless vessel, including the animals and the plants and the rocks,
uh-huh.
and the atoms that are not part of anything,
uh-huh.
all are part of the endless vessel.
Uh-huh.
The endless vessel has all the potential consciousness that can ever be, all the potential desires to receive that can ever be revealed. There's a desire to receive called a bear. It manifests in the physical world as the animal called a bear. That's why it's in the world, because there's a desire to receive that we have named bear. And there are people that have affinity with those bears.
Well, I've gone to the forest and I've seen them, and it's
to that extent you have affinity with them.
Yeah.
To that extent.
Uh-huh.
Now I can tell you, I watched a program on TV that was talking about the night of the killing bears, where three people were mauled and killed by two different bears on the same mountain on the same night.
Mm-hmm.
Coincidence? No. But, science says it's coincidence. And it was at that point that the government in the national parks changed their approach to the bears, and they started to remove them from, if a bear was doing something wrong, they now transport it into the wilderness, back to its home environment. Cause and effect. Always look for cause and effect. And expand your mind. Give yourself the opportunity to think of something really out of the box. And you'll find that what you're thinking about is probably true.
I remember my husband and I were first married, we went on a camping trip with another couple. You ever gone camping?
Yes.
Well, they split off around Idaho, and we continued up to Canada.
Right.
And so we were only married a couple of years. We decided to wanted to go and see all the sights and sounds of the forest, right? So we're in the forest up near Banff. They had a big campground up there. And we got friendly with a lot of the Canadians and people living there. So, are you there?
I am.
Oh. So, anyway, we went off sightseeing, and we came upon a mother bear with her cubs, and she ran over to the tree, sent her cubs up the tree, and she stood there and stomped on the ground. So we took it from that. Well, she doesn't want us coming any closer. We wanted to take some pictures. And at that point, we decided, okay, we won't take any pictures. We'll leave. And we turned around to leave, and we found ourselves surrounded with a ring of bears. They all lifted their heads up from the tree trunks and the leaves, and we had never seen them walking into this area. Before. Well, I must say, we did hot
fire. I imagine you left that area pretty quickly.
Yeah, we did. But they never ran after us. They just looked.
They didn't need to. Yeah. They didn't need to.
Yeah.
I have a teacher who describes a walk that he took, a camping trip that he took. And when he goes camping, he's really going to meditate. He's going out into the green, out into the nature to meditate.
Mm-hmm.
And he describes being woken up by sticks and prodding, and he wakes up. He's in the middle of nature in the forest out where there's nobody. I mean, he's 100 miles from civilization. He's surrounded by little people, which are very common in the history, in the myths of humanity all through the world.
Really?
These little people, he's surrounded with them. This is something I think it happened to him 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
Wow.
And they were very angry at him for intruding into their space.
Huh.
That his dreams and his consciousness were intruding into their place.
Oh, amazing.
And that was, that was the bear who was telling you, you're in the wrong place. And you took the message.
Yes, I did.
Had you not taken the message, you would, God forbid, been attacked.
Yeah. We've seen the bears and do some really funny things. We used to see them stand up and fight each other, forage for food. They'd stand up on their hind legs and fight each other. And we saw some really interesting sights when we were out there. And some of them would try and break into food lockers, and they'd rattle the lockers. And sometimes they did it. They'd break in and get the food out of there. In Canada, they used to tell you to stow the food up in a tree. Because they said if they smell it anywhere on the ground, they're going to come and get it. So we had a couple, there were four people came in with this beautiful, huge tent. I mean, it was really huge. So anyway, they started moving food in their tent, and everybody says, oh, no, don't put the food in the tent. You've got to get it up in a tree or whatever, because they'll be in to visit you. Oh, no, they won't. We have a zipper here and a lock, and they won't come in here.
Little do you know.
Yeah, everybody goes away. We come back. The whole tent is shredded, and the food is gone. And they go away. they take the remnants of the tent repair, to see if he can repair it. And they come back a few days later, and they set up the tent again. And again, they're doing the same action. Everybody says, why are you doing that? You know, you just did that. You saw what happened. So he said, well, they already got what they wanted. They won't be back.
I'm good.
I can't believe that, but...
We're out of town. Out of time.
We are. We're out of town also. Why,
that's true. Yeah. So while we didn't read from any of the sages tonight, but I think it was well worth the discussion, questions that you were asking and where we went with this discussion. It's really important to recognize that we, the way we perceive the world is so false. And this is part of recognizing and learning to exercise our consciousness and expanding our consciousness to learn what really is happening. And this is what the sages and what Kabbalah teach us. But unfortunately, people don't spend the time to learn this. And when you do learn it, oh, it's just an interesting fact, and that's not what I'm teaching, Bernice. I'm teaching you, and other people, start to utilize this in your life. So start thinking about it. When you walk across the room, think about what you're doing. Don't do it because you need to walk across the room. Start realizing you're already across the room, and now the physical world is catching up to that image. Cause and effect.
If I tell my husband this, he's going to say, you're crazy. What is that?
So, you tell your husband that, and he says, you're crazy. So what? But you don't tell your husband this, so what? The point is, start thinking about it because it changes the way you perceive the world.
Yeah.
But if you continue down the path of the way we have been taught for thousands of years, and in our lifetime, this lifetime, for numbers of years, if you continue down that path, there's no growth.
You know,
so start perceiving the world the way it is meant to be perceived, the way the Kabbalists tell us to see it.
You know, I had went through a period there. It was like a mental exercise thing. I don't know how I got into it, but instead of driving down the road, I used to go down the road in loops. You understand what I mean? Instead of driving straight down the road, I'm driving in loops. I'm looping the car up and down, and driving ahead and up and down, and driving and up and down. So,
I'm not sure what you mean by loops, but I think you
well,
like.
Instead of driving straight, flat on the ground, I'm elevating and going in a circle and down, and driving a bit and then. And a circle down. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I do.
Like that.
I did it actually with my kids they were toddlers.
Yeah.
I did it. Yeah. But I did it not so much from the standpoint of horizontal things like you're talking about. But I did it, you know, I turned the wheel to the right and then quickly turn it to the left and back and forth.
Oh, okay.
So the kids would be thrown around the back seat.
Uh-huh.
You know, and obviously I didn't do it, you know, doing it rapidly or doing it, you know. But
yeah.
they had a ball falling all over the seat.
Oh.
Of course, the kids have fun doing anything. So, but they had a ball falling all over the seat, and they always used to ask me to do wiggly-waggly. So it's the same idea, but you're actually describing a different dimension that I hadn't even thought of doing.
Yeah.
And that is to change it into a horizontal as well as the vertical.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I used to call it loop the loop. I didn't know how to describe it, you know.
Well, you should do it again.
Yeah, well, I have
because this is exercising your consciousness and expanding it. Mm-hmm. And you know, you need to do that all the time. Mm-hmm. No. So
I got so involved with other things I kind of forgot about doing that. But now that we're talking about this, I'm remembering what I did there and didn't even think about it, you know? I just like did it.
You don't remember this, but a few weeks back, yeah, you asked me why you had, you know, the psychic abilities that you had. What is its purpose?
Yeah.
And you've just explained to me how you exercised your psychic abilities on a different plane. And that's why you got and developed those psychic abilities, because of doing those kinds of exercises as a young woman.
Really? I didn't realize that that's what happened.
You know it, but by doing that, you were expanding your consciousness. You were exercising your psychic ability. Mm. You were strengthening them.
Interesting. I had no idea that one thing went with the other. I just thought, why don't I just try this? Oh, okay.
Everything connects with everything else.
I didn't think
everything is unified, and that's what it means.
Yeah, but sometimes I do things and I get scared. Scare myself. Ah, what's this? Like the time that that bird came, all of a sudden, what's that? What happened? I actually got white like a sheet, my sister told me. She says, what happened? But that, when I saw that vision of this big ostrich-like bird in the room, what? What's this? I mean, things sometimes happen to me like that, and then I scare myself. I don't know how that comes about, but I just, from time to time that happens to me too, so.
Understood.
Yeah.
So, as I said, we're out of time, so.
Okay.
Have a good evening.
You too. Have a wonderful evening.